John F. Kennedy died almost a half century ago, yet because of his extraordinary promise and untimely death, his star still resonates strongly. On the anniversary of his assassination, University of Virginia political scientist and analyst Larry Sabato explores the influence JFK has had over five decades on the media, the general public, and especially on each of his nine presidential successors. In his new book, The Kennedy Half Century, Sabato re-examines JFK's assassination using new and unseen information to which he has had unique access, then documents the extraordinary effect the assassination has had on Americans of every modern generation through the most extensive survey ever undertaken on the public's view of an historical figure. Larry Sabato is the founder and director of the renowned Center for Politics at the University of Virginia, and we welcome him to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
It seems, in reading the book, that you have several things that you want to do here. One of them is to re-examine the assassination itself, then look at the effect, and then you have a fascinating poll that you look at of the impact that this president and the assassination has had on the American people. When you set out to do this project, there were very specific questions you wanted to answer, I assume.
Absolutely. Essentially, I wanted to understand not just the Kennedy administration and the Kennedy career, because that's been explored thoroughly. I wanted to see if I could contribute something new to the signal event, the flashbulb moment of November 22nd, 1963. Not so much just for that, but to understand better the effect that it has had for the last 50 years. There's a reason, many reasons, in fact, why all nine of John F. Kennedy's successors have quoted him often more extensively than any other president. And that's why we conducted the national survey, the largest survey ever done on a historical figure, to see how the public viewed him and to see whether that had an effect on those nine presidents in the White House.
When you started to look at the assassination itself, it's what you start off in the book, in the first part of the book, of looking at the assassination itself, and there are key things that you wanted to discover. What were your question marks? What were the things that you wanted to answer that didn't make sense to you?
I wanted to know how the Warren Commission failed as badly as it did, because that was already obvious to anyone who had looked into this and had studied it for some time. You know, you can come to the right conclusions. I'm not saying they did, but you can come to the right conclusions and have a rotten process. And in a case like this, the murder of a president, your process had better be good, it had better convince people, it has to be credible. The Warren Commission failed on all of those grounds, mainly because of its own weaknesses, but also because it was lied to by the CIA, the FBI, and others. That was certainly question number one. Question number two, I wanted to focus on hard evidence. It's one thing to have a theory, and by the way, there are 311 of them. 311 theories on the assassination of President Kennedy, and no doubt the number's growing in this 50th anniversary season. But a theory's just a theory. You have to have proof. You have to have something that would stand up in court, stand up against a tough cross-examination. And most of those theories fall apart when you really examine them. So I wanted to look at hard evidence and see if modern techniques could bleed more out of that evidence than we've been able to this point.
One of those is really the thing that's making a lot of news from this book, and that is an audio recording that was supposedly made by a police officer who was in the motorcade in Dallas. And the committee relied on that recording, in which we believe we hear four shots. Using the technology that you mentioned just a moment ago and using some of the best audio experts in the world, you believe that those are not shots.
They're not shots at all. We've proved it beyond a shadow of a doubt. What we've done in this book is to explode the investigation done in the 1970s, the second investigation, the reinvestigation of President Kennedy's murder that was undertaken by the House of Representatives because of a lack of faith in the Warren Commission. They concluded at the end of a three-year study that President Kennedy was probably killed as the result of a conspiracy. And as you have correctly noted, They based it on a police recording that was indeed recorded on the day of the assassination, right at 12:30, and they had audio experts using the techniques of the time come in, and they found four shots, and they did a lot of testing in Dealey Plaza and fired shots at sandbags and all the rest of it to get the right reverberation patterns. The problem is they completely misconstrued the evidence they had. And all of us know this. When you go into an investigation looking for something, you probably will find it. They were looking for gunshots because they believed that this was a recording of what had happened in Dealey Plaza, where President Kennedy was assassinated, at precisely 12:30 on November 22, 1963. We've proven beyond a shadow of a doubt, using much more advanced techniques, that in fact there are no gunshots on this tape at all, and the recording was made of a policeman who was 2.5 miles away at the Trade Mart in Dallas waiting for President Kennedy to come and deliver, sadly, the luncheon speech he never gave.
So with this, you believe that Oswald was the sole shooter, but you make a point which I think is important, which is you can say that, yet you believe we will never know 100% accuracy, know if he acted alone.
That is absolutely correct. There is no way to know whether he was encouraged by anybody else, whether in fact there was a backup shooter, for example, behind the grassy knoll, behind the picket fence. These things are live possibilities with many reasonable suspects. Why won't we ever know? Because the Warren Commission failed to go down the trails while they were hot. It's 50 years later. Just about everybody's dead. And the great tragedy is Jack Ruby killed Lee Harvey Oswald barely 2 days after the assassination before he was really questioned thoroughly, and they would have broken him. They would have found out the truth because they had different methods back then. And I've talked to a key prosecutor, the only one left living. He's in his 90s. And he made it very clear to me they were planning on using those techniques in the following week to get the truth out of Oswald. They would have done it. We lost that ability with his killing by Jack Ruby.
You write in the book, about midway through the book, and then in a chapter entitled The Assassination and the Kennedy Legacy, hundreds of books and studies have been written about the Kennedy assassination. Alert readers have noticed that their authors often use the words alleged, claimed, and supposedly, just as I have done in this book. The debate over the Kennedy assassination is one of the longest-running sagas in American history, involving hundreds of subplots. Facts and quasi-facts have dribbled out over 5 decades. To look at what you just wrote and to then get into the next phase of the book about the legacy of this president, how much of that, how much of what we know and what we don't know and that mix has formed our opinion and has really sealed how we look at the 35th president of the United States today?
A great deal of it relates to November 22nd, both the horrible personal tragedy, the youngest president ever elected becoming the youngest to die right in front of his wife, murdered brutally, never having the opportunity to see his children grow up, or indeed to establish a thorough presidential legacy. He only had 1,038 days in the White House. So that's the human dimension of the tragedy. Then when you add on the James Bond spy thrillers that are connected to what may or may not have happened November 22nd, and the eternal public debate about it, essentially what you have is an unsolvable crime, a great mystery, a tragic figure, many tragic figures, but particularly President Kennedy, and the opportunity for this to become an issue forever. It has been for 5 decades. 100 years from now, 200 years from now, we won't be around, but I'll bet our children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren will still be debating it.
When it comes to the influence that Kennedy and the assassination had on future presidents, it's one of the most fascinating parts of the book. When you decide to look at that, which is, of course, so much of what is your expertise and what you have made your career doing of looking at politics and political motivations, is a lot of it clear cut that it comes right from Kennedy, or is it sometimes much more vague and something that you have to read into?
Well, that's a great question, because there is what John F. Kennedy actually believed and did, and then there is what successor presidents have presented as what he said and did out of his context and put into their context. Because after all, they're not quoting him for his health. They're quoting John F. Kennedy for their health, for their agenda, to get their particular programs adopted by Congress and accepted by the public. So the image of John F. Kennedy has changed over the years and depends on which president's in office and how he's using him. After all, some of the most impressive use of Kennedy came from Ronald Reagan. You would think he was the ideological opposite, but Reagan found a couple things in common with John F. Kennedy: strong anti-communism and the support for across-the-board tax cuts. Kennedy had the first serious across-the-board tax cut. So it's interesting how different presidents have used this. And yes, I consider this to be, other than the finding on the assassination, my original contribution to the field in understanding Kennedy's legacy being different than other presidents' legacies. They had longer to accomplish things. Kennedy didn't. His legacy has been formed by his successors.
When you think, obviously time has a lot to do with this, so the impact and legacy obviously impacts Johnson a lot differently than it impacts President Obama.
Oh, certainly, because the immediacy of the assassination for Lyndon Johnson enabled him to convert the grief and the guilt and all those other emotions into legislation. All he had to say was, this is a monument to President Kennedy. Fascinating little fact here that I researched for the book. Kennedy, of course, won by a sliver. He actually got something like 49.7% of the vote to eke out a win over Richard Nixon in 1960. Shortly after the assassination, 64% of Americans claimed to have voted for him in 1960. That is how overwhelming the emotion was, as anyone who was alive at the time will tell you.
In looking at the presidents that followed, it seems that Clinton is the president that comes as close as any to be Kennedy-esque. Is that a safe assessment?
Yes, because he fashioned himself after Kennedy. Kennedy was his real hero. He had been his boyhood hero. Goodness knows, we've seen that little clip of him shaking President Kennedy's hand as he represented Boys Nation in the Rose Garden in June 1963.
Right.
So Kennedy had a real impact on Clinton.
And how much do you believe that comes from... And this gets back to an earlier point about is it a ideological belief, or is it in what we have painted this president to be?
I think it's more the latter, and you're right to bring up ideology, because of course Kennedy actually is bipartisan in today's terms. He was a cold warrior because that was essential at his time. He represented tough foreign policy, national interests projected around the world. That tends to suit Republicans. Also, his economic and domestic policies were certainly not wildly liberal. He had to be dragged kicking and screaming to the civil rights movement. He did favor a large tax cut, though it was geared to lower and middle income voters as opposed to upper income voters. There are similarities and differences. What really surprised me in our public opinion study was to find that Kennedy is the only post-World War II president who has a bipartisan profile. That is, Democrats, Republicans, and Independents all have favorable opinions of him. Every other president is partisan in his popular profile.
Larry Sabato is the author of The Kennedy Half Century, The Presidency, Assassination, and Lasting Legacy of John F. Kennedy. You write about Ronald Reagan and his administration in the book and talk about how they wanted to bring in as much of the Kennedy luster as they could, to the point where they had a quote file.
Yes, they had researched Kennedy's career thoroughly, and they'd picked out really everything he had said that could apply to anything Ronald Reagan wanted. And it goes beyond that, because remember, when Reagan is quoting Kennedy that much, potentially he's opening himself up to criticism from the Kennedys. So what did Reagan do? Almost from the first, he started cultivating the Kennedys. He knew one thing for sure. He and Nancy were thrilled on election night, but there was somebody else in the country almost as thrilled that he had defeated President Jimmy Carter. His name was Ted Kennedy, because he'd run against Carter. He hated Carter. And so from the beginning, he started cultivating not just Ted, but all the other Kennedys. He managed even to get a note out of John F. Kennedy Jr., the president's son, saying, "You have my permission to quote my father whenever you want." And Reagan waved that around, believe me.
And the only presidents that come close to this are FDR and Abraham Lincoln. Right?
Absolutely. And, you know, you could argue about Washington and Jefferson, but, you know, they're, I think, in a sense, they faded simply because of time and not representing certain values of current society. But Abraham Lincoln, absolutely. FDR, absolutely. And in the modern era, you can make a case for Kennedy, you make a case for Reagan. That's really about it.
How much of what we use today and the quotes that we use from Kennedy and not so much, both in political terms and with politicians and with the general public, how much of that is genuine inspiration, do you believe, from the president?
Well, I think for the members of the public, it is genuine inspiration. And Kennedy, because even though he had a short life, he gave an awful lot of speeches, and he was very good at impromptu speech and press conference speech. He could do well without a teleprompter. We have a rich history of his rhetoric. Now, because he was kind of bipartisan in a lot of ways, we use him like at the University of Virginia, founded by Thomas Jefferson. We use Thomas Jefferson. We start and end every argument with a quote from Thomas Jefferson. And he said so much and wrote so much that there's probably something you can use on all sides of every issue. The same is true for John F. Kennedy.
As we've mentioned, there's certainly no shortage of books on the president and the assassination this time. And I'm curious as to what you think is required reading, other than your own book, of getting a sense of what happened.
Well, I think you want to read anything by Ted Sorensen, because he was Kennedy's wordsmith. He drafted up the famous inaugural address, which arguably, other than Lincoln's second, is the best in American history. So anything by Ted Sorensen to really understand Kennedy, because he had a mind meld with Kennedy. I would choose him first and foremost. And really, I think for Kennedy's career, there's a wide choice of books that are quite good. Here's what you don't get and why I think the Kennedy Half Century fills a void. We don't see Kennedy's post-assassination life as clearly as we should. This is a season for remembrance, and maybe for those of us who lived at the time, a season for sadness. But shouldn't we remember more about the man's life and legacy than the moment of his death and the manner of his death? I think that's a minimum that anyone can expect, prince or pauper.
Do you see that legacy changing? I mean, well, 50 years, we've seen what's happened in 50 years. Do you see that legacy changing?
Yes, I do. Inevitably, new presidents with new agendas are going to find pieces of the Kennedy record they can use to promote their agenda. That's why the legacy continues to evolve.
And you always have the words. You always have the speeches. You always have...
The wit. Don't forget the wit.
The wit. Absolutely. And with all of that, that we can look to that for really a true representation of who the man was and what he believed.
And the video, the film from the day. You know, Kennedy cut a dashing figure, not just in person, but on film. He was truly Hollywood meets Washington. And now think back over the presidents of the 20th century. We're fascinated by Teddy Roosevelt and FDR and Reagan, but there is no one who translates better into the 21st century than John F. Kennedy. And I suspect that will continue to be true.
The name of the book is The Kennedy Half Century, The Presidency, Assassination, and Lasting Legacy of John F. Kennedy. The book is published by Bloomsbury. Larry Sabato, I thank you very much for sharing with us this morning.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. It was a good conversation.
Great pleasure. Thank you. Again, the title of the book is The Kennedy Half Century by Larry Sabato. It is published by Bloomsbury. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.